finally arrived, he explained that he'd been at the doctor's office. Mother had gone to Dr. Hamilton because she felt a lump in her breast, and she was still with the doctor who was doing some tests. When Daddy and I arrived at the doctor's office, the doctor explained that he couldn't be sure, but the lump felt like cancer to him. In those days, you didn't wait for second opinions and analysis. Mother would have surgery on Monday morning. It was likely she would lose her right breast, and then we'd see what else could be done. That weekend was consumed with preparations for her hospital stay. I'll never forget the sight of Mother cooking and cooking, making and freezing chicken and beef roast and vegetables so that we would have enough to eat while she was hospitalized. I suspected she was trying to get her mind off what she was facing. In 1970, cancer was considered a death sentence. I could tell that she was scared. I could tell that Daddy was scared. And I was terrified. Not frightened in the same way that I'd been by the bombings in Birmingham. This cut much deeper. I could not conceive of life without my mother. Mother was admitted to the hospital Sunday night. My parents decided that I should go to school that Monday. I think that was the longest day of my life. By the time I reached my 1 o'clock Latin class, I just couldn't wait any longer for the news. I asked Mrs. Winters if I could go to the office and call my father, explaining that my mother was having surgery. I waited for what seemed like an hour in the principal's paneled office. Her time is up for today. I hope you will join me next time when we continue with Extraordinary, Ordinary People by Condoleezza Rice. This is Rosemary Scalesa-Fragars, the Georgia Radio Reading Service.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for the Noon Book Hour. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Music and Memories, followed by USA Today at 2.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 45 and mostly cloudy. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the upper 30s. Then tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update for this Thursday, February 25th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and here are some of the articles that we'll be reading for you this afternoon. Researchers find worrying new coronavirus variant in New York City. New research shows California coronavirus variant is more transmissible. Moderna CEO says current vaccine numbers far from indicative of future production. COVID-19 vaccine shots administered as second doses outpace first doses in U.S., CDC data shows. U.S. likely to see surge in COVID-19 cases by mid-March due to variant, epidemiologist says. Pfizer-BioNTech test a booster against new variants. Despite U.S. COVID-19 cases dropping, infections are still staggeringly high. Here's what has experts worried. Post-vaccination observation period may not be necessary for Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. 1 in 10 people infected suffer from long COVID, World Health Organization says. 5 experts on when it will be safe to travel again. Those articles coming up. First, we'll take a look at the numbers for this Thursday, February 25th. From Ector County, these numbers coming from the Texas Health and Human Services Department. Confirmed cases, 8,375. Probable cases, 7,815. Fatalities, 321. Estimated active cases, 1,596. Estimated recovered, 14,273. Midland County. Confirmed cases, 16,236. Fatalities, 236. Estimated active cases, 913. Estimated recovered, 15,087. From the Texas Tribune, editor's note, reporting of coronavirus cases and deaths was delayed because of last week's winter storm. As a result, we are not noting weekly changes in cases and deaths. Vaccine distribution is also affected. Vaccine doses decreased. An average of 38,033 vaccine doses have been administered each day in the last week. As of February 23rd, 5.1% of Texans have been fully vaccinated. New cases. On February 24th, 4,991 new confirmed cases and 2,009 new probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations decreased by 871 patients compared with a week ago. As of February 24th, 6,738 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. New deaths. On February 24th, 339 new deaths were reported. Now we'll take a look at coronavirus briefs. There have been at least 28,338,150 cases of coronavirus in the U.S. since the pandemic began, and at least 506,121 people have died from COVID-19, according to Johns Hopkins University's tally of cases in the United States. So far today, the U.S. reported 2,053 new cases and 231 new deaths. At least 88,669,035 vaccine doses have been distributed, and at least 66,464,947 total doses of the vaccine have been administered, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. More than 2.5 million people across the world have died due to the coronavirus. At least 2,500,770 people have died since the beginning of the pandemic, according to Johns Hopkins University data. The U.S. leads with most deaths, followed by Brazil, Mexico, India, and the U.K. On February 22nd, the U.S. surpassed 500,000 total 19 deaths mark, according to Johns Hopkins University. Moderna said Wednesday that it has manufactured a new version of its coronavirus vaccine that is tailored to quell infection by the variant first identified in South Africa. A small amount of vaccine has been sent to the National Institutes of Health for a trial to determine whether boosting humans with the modified vaccine will stimulate a strong immune response, the company said. The news came after the release of a Food and Drug Administration review finding the single-shot coronavirus made by pharmaceutical giant Johnson & Johnson safe and effective. The review sets the stage for a third coronavirus vaccine to be authorized in the United States as soon as this weekend. Domestic production of coronavirus vaccine increased while global death rate decreased, the World Health Organization said. European Health Commissioner says EU's goal is to vaccinate 70% of adults by summer. UK COVID-19 cases fell nearly 80% in 6 weeks of lockdown. New unemployment claims decreased by 111,000 last week, the biggest drop in new claims since August, and a positive sign as the coronavirus pandemic spread has slowed in recent weeks. Now, here are some short articles. Researchers find worrying new coronavirus variant in New York City. From CNN's Maggie Fox. Two separate teams of researchers said this week they have found a worrying new coronavirus variant in New York City and elsewhere in the Northeast that carries mutations that help it evade the body's natural immune response, as well as the effects of monoclonal antibody treatments. Researchers have named the variant B1526. It appears in people affected in diverse neighborhoods of New York City, they said, and is scattered in the Northeast. One of the mutations in this variant is the same concerning change found in the variant first seen in South Africa, known as B1351. It appears to evade somewhat the body's response to vaccines as well, and it's becoming more common. We observed a steady increase in the detection rate from late December to mid-February, with an alarming rise to 12.7% in the past 2 weeks, one team at Columbia University Medical Center wrote in a report that has yet to be published, although it is scheduled to appear in a preprint version this week. It's homegrown, presumably in New York, said Dr. David Ho, director of the Aaron Diamond AIDS Research Center at Columbia, who led the study team, said by email. The mutation in this variant that most concerns researchers is called E484K, and it gives the virus the ability to slip past some of the body's immune response as well as the authorized monoclonal antibody treatments. Now here's another article along the same lines, except this one from the West Coast. New research shows California coronavirus variant is more transmissible, by Joel Achenbach and Carolyn Y. Johnson. A coronavirus variant detected in California this winter rapidly became dominant in the state over 5 months and now makes up more than half of the infections in 44 counties, according to new research from scientists who believe this version of the virus should be declared a variant of concern, warranting urgent follow-up investigation. The United States has been ramping up scrutiny of the shape-shifting virus, and scientists have identified many genetically distinct variants, but there is continued uncertainty and debate over which of these mutations are significant and to what extent. The variant identified in California has emerged as potentially the first homegrown variant of concern in the United States, though it has not yet been designated that by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The variant contains a mutation that scientists suspect is enhancing the virus's ability to bind to human receptor cells. If truly more transmissible, as the new study contends, the California variant joins a growing list of virus variants circulating in the United States as the country continues to emerge from the devastating winter wave of infections, hospitalizations, and deaths. Moderna CEO says current vaccine numbers far from indicative of future production, from CNN's James Frater. Moderna's current vaccine production numbers are far from indicative of future production, Moderna CEO Stephanie Bancel said during an EU virtual summit Thursday. The numbers we are producing today are far from indicative of what we can produce in the future, Bancel said. We expect that the additional capacity investment, which we announced yesterday, to drive up to 1.4 billion doses in 2022 will be helpful. Bancel noted that some of the delays in Moderna's vaccine delivery are due to the company not having a stockpile of the vaccines as they attempt to get every dose shipped to its destination country as quickly as possible. In the pandemic, every dose is crucial, and we want that dose not to be in a factory or warehouse, but to be in somebody's arm, Bancel said. So the doses we make are shipped right away. We have no inventory, which means that any minor setback, like a broken pump or simple human mistake by one other operator, can mean less doses produced that hour. European supply is one of Moderna's biggest commitments to date. With this in mind, we are constantly refining our processes in manufacturing, finding new efficiencies, and we continue to improve our speed. I am dedicated, as is my team, to delivering on this increasing the delivery commitment, Bancel said. Bancel added that just yesterday, Moderna shipped the first phases of a trial product aimed at combating the coronavirus variant first identified in South Africa to the U.S. National Institutes of Health. As you know, this is a variant of concern, Bancel said, so we're very proud that this product has been shipped to start clinical trial very soon in humans. COVID-19 vaccine shots administered as second doses outpace first doses in U.S., CDC data shows, from CNN's Michael Nettleman and Deirdre McPhillips. The number of COVID-19 vaccine doses administered in the U.S. as second doses outpaced first doses for the first time over the past week, according to data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Over the past 7 days, the number of doses administered has jumped by nearly 10.2 million doses. Of those, just over half, 5.1 million, were second doses. The week before that added over 11.5 million newly administered doses to the total. 5 million, or 43%, were second doses. To date, about 14% of the population, more than 45 million people, have received at least one dose of the vaccine. More than 6% of the population, about 20.6 million people, have been fully vaccinated with both shots. Data published by the CDC may be delayed, and doses may not have been given on the day reported. More on where U.S. vaccines stand. Both vaccines currently authorized for emergency use in the U.S. from Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech require two shots several weeks apart. A single-dose vaccine by Johnson & Johnson may receive the same authorization within the coming days. Amid low vaccine supply, a number of experts have advocated delaying second doses in favor of getting more people their first. Some research has suggested a high degree of temporary protection from just one dose. However, U.S. officials have pushed back on this, saying it's unclear how long that protection lasts, and arguing that we need to stick with the evidence from clinical trials. U.S. likely to see surge in COVID-19 cases by mid-March due to variant, epidemiologist says, from CNN's Adrian Vogt. Epidemiologist Michael Osterholm says that while the United States is in a downward trend with coronavirus cases, he expects an increase in cases to occur in the next few weeks due to a highly contagious variant first detected in the United Kingdom. We're seeing the B117, or the UK variant, double about every 10 days in this country, Osterholm said on CNN's New Day. It often takes 4, 6, even 8 weeks of this virus circulating before it really takes off, going from kind of the small little brush pile fire to a large forest fire, said Osterholm, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. Osterholm said he is concerned once we get to around the third week of March. He also said he is worried that millions of people over 65 years may not have had their first shot of vaccine by the end of March, and he suggested that health authorities target that population for at least a single dose. We have the compelling data that they have remarkable responses after a single dose. So to me, it's a no-brainer, but we've got to act on it soon because this variant isn't waiting for us to get our act together, Osterholm said. Pfizer-BioNTech test a booster against new variants, from CNN Health's Amanda Seeley. Pfizer and its partner BioNTech said Thursday that they have begun to test how well a third dose of their authorized vaccine stacks up against new coronavirus variants. The study will look at the safety and immune response of a booster dose in up to 144 participants from the earlier Phase 1 trial in the U.S., including a subset of older adults up to age 85. It will also involve testing how well their antibodies are able to neutralize strains of interest in the lab, the company said. Volunteers would receive a third dose between 6 and 12 months after their earlier two doses. The dosage would be identical to what's currently authorized, 30 micrograms. This booster study is critical to understanding the safety of a third dose and efficacy against circulating strains, Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla said in a statement. Separately, Pfizer and BioNTech are also in ongoing discussions with regulatory authorities about potentially testing a vaccine that has been modified to protect against concerning variants in a Phase 1-2 study. However, Bourla noted the companies haven't yet seen compelling evidence that variants are resistant to its vaccine, though they are taking steps to be prepared. On Monday, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration announced new guidelines that would streamline and quicken the process of updating vaccines to target variants. An agency official estimated this could involve several hundred individuals and take a few months. Despite U.S. COVID-19 cases dropping, infections are still staggeringly high. Here's what has experts worried. From CNN's Christina Maxoris. A new ensemble forecast published Wednesday by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, suggests the country's daily COVID-19 death rate will slow in the coming weeks. Good news following more than a month of declining case and hospitalization numbers. But now is no time to let up on safety measures for several reasons, according to experts. First, COVID-19 numbers across the U.S. remain staggeringly high. For the past week, the U.S. has averaged more than 72,000 new cases daily, according to Johns Hopkins University data. Getting infection numbers down now not only will help prevent the virus from further mutating, but will also give vaccines a better shot at remaining effective. More than 54,000 people remain hospitalized with the virus nationwide, according to the COVID Tracking Project, and more than 57,000 COVID-19 deaths have been recorded this month alone. On Wednesday, California became the first state to surpass 50,000 virus-related deaths, Johns Hopkins data showed, a grim reminder of its brutal battle against the virus. Another big reason to remain cautious, experts have warned another case surge is likely on its way, one that will this time be fueled by coronavirus variants, and the country is still nowhere near herd immunity levels. In fact, health experts are preparing for a possible third wave that will be driven by a rapidly spreading variant that was first identified in the UK, B117. Data from the CDC shows more than 1,880 cases of the variant have been detected across the U.S., but scientists have warned that number likely doesn't represent the total cases in the country. Post-vaccination observation period may not be necessary for Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. From CNN Health's Virginia Langmaid. The post-vaccination observation period, required after the administration of Pfizer and Moderna's COVID-19 vaccines, may not be necessary for Johnson & Johnson's vaccine. Dr. Nirav Shah, deputy director of the Maine Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said in a media briefing by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Wednesday. The J&J vaccine, which the FDA said on Wednesday meets requirements for emergency use authorization, works differently from vaccines produced by Pfizer and Moderna. The difference may remove some of the constraints that have been in place for safety reasons with the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine, said Shaw. For example, the observation period. The J&J vaccine is made using an adenoviral vector. A small piece of genetic material from the coronavirus is inserted into a weakened version of a common cold virus called an andovirus. Pfizer and Moderna's vaccine uses a newer platform called mRNA, or messenger RNA, that delivers instructions to the cells to make a small piece of the coronavirus spike protein, which primes the immune system to recognize the virus in the future. Pfizer and Moderna's vaccines have been associated with some rare cases of severe allergic reaction, or anaphylaxis, which may be related to a vaccine ingredient called polyethylene glycol, PEG, P-E-G, which is part of the fatty coating used to encapsulate the mRNA particles. 1 in 10 people infected suffer from long COVID, World Health Organization says. By the Washington Post's Aaron Cunningham. About 1 in 10 people who have contracted COVID-19 continue to show symptoms 3 months after infection, the World Health Organization said Thursday, urging policymakers to do more to acknowledge and treat the phenomenon often referred as long COVID. Symptoms can include everything from fatigue to chest pain to depression to a loss of smell, the WHO said in a policy brief released Thursday by its Europe division. The head of the WHO Europe, Hans Kluge, said many thousands are suffering from persistent ill health with severe social, economic, health, and occupational consequences. The burden is real and it is significant. But as with any new disease, so much was and remains unknown, Kluge said at the briefing, adding that doctors and patients have mapped a path in the dark. Some experiencing long-term symptoms have been met with disbelief or lack of understanding, he said. The sufferers of post-COVID conditions need to be heard if we are to understand the long-term consequences. His warnings came as global infections have reached 118 million, although cases are trending downward worldwide. Vaccinations against the virus are on the rise. Despite the proliferation of new variants, experts say are more contagious than the original strain. People grappling with the lingering effects of COVID-19 have reported feeling stigmatized and unable to persuade medical professionals to take their cases seriously, according to the brief, titled Preparing for Long COVID. It also found that women and healthcare workers appeared to be at greater risk. About a quarter of those with COVID-19 suffer symptoms about a month after testing positive, but some 1 in 10 experience symptoms after 12 weeks, according to the authors. Five Experts on When It Will Be Safe to Travel Again by Hannah Sampson, Washington Post. Facing a second spring without the promise of a break, frustrated would-be travelers can be forgiven for feeling weary. But infectious disease experts say there are better days for travel ahead as the number of vaccinations increases and the new coronavirus cases drop. Exactly when that will happen and what those days will look like is unclear, and unknowns still loom. How long will immunity last after people are vaccinated or infected? Can they still transmit the virus? Will vaccines work as well as new variants emerge? What experts can say is that travel will be safer for some people and in some places sooner rather than later. They also agree that normal is a long way away. And now finally, here's one more very short article from the Washington Post. More than 11 million counterfeit N95 masks seized in recent weeks, DHS says. By Erin Cunningham, Derek Hawkins, and Hannah Knowles, Washington Post, published February 17th. The Department of Homeland Security has seized more than 11 million counterfeit N95 masks meant for frontline workers in recent weeks, officials said Wednesday. It's the latest reported victory in a long-running battle against fraudulent attempts to profit from the coronavirus pandemic. The seizures stem from operations in five states, with more enforcement actions expected in the coming weeks, DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said at a news briefing. Officials say they expect criminal charges and underscored the danger of fraudulent protective gear that gives first responders a false sense of security. And now that wraps up your coronavirus update for this Thursday, February 25th, 2021. Coming up next, we will bring you the magazine Healthy Living. And then following that at 2 o'clock, we'll of course have national news from USA Today. At 3, it's our local news broadcast. And here are some of the articles from that two-hour program that our volunteers are reading today. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, energy. Endeavor CEO says recovery is faster than anyone expected. Energy. Most electric customers protected from sky-high energy bills. Mindset changes. Local photographer creates online confidence courses for women. From the Odessa American today, City Council expands ODC. Speaker touts conservatism and diversity in Texas. And ECISD taps third future for Ector Partner. Those articles and more are coming up at 3 o'clock. And then, of course, at 6, will bring you the Wall Street Journal. At 7 o'clock, finally, after 2 weeks, we have a new Texas Monthly Archives program for you. This one is going to be a true crime article. Our long-term volunteer, Linda, will be reading an article published in April 1982 from Texas Monthly called The Killer Next Door. Through the wall of our duplex, Richard and Nancy Lyon sounded like a happy couple. Then she turned up dead, and he was accused of poisoning her. That article from April 1982 coming up tonight in a true crime episode of Texas Monthly Archives at 7 o'clock. And, of course, you'll be able to hear that again Sunday afternoon at 2 and then Monday morning at 1. Thank you, as always, for bringing us into your home and listening to our program. We'll be back tomorrow afternoon for a Friday at 1 o'clock. Thank you again. Be safe and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 45 and mostly cloudy. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the upper 30s. Then tomorrow clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night mostly cloudy with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Healthy Life, and I'm your reader, Tony Ray, with the Audio Reading Service of the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Men's Health, and I'm going to begin with a lengthy article about the Top 10 Fear Power List, Understanding Modern Fear and Learn to Thrive Even with the Uncertainty. The article begins with information from Nicholas Keraton, Ph.D., The Incredibly Complex World of Fear. Nicholas Keraton, Ph.D., a professor of clinical psychology at the University of Regina in Canada, published a somewhat provocative paper in the Journal of Anxiety Disorders several years ago. He began by reprinting and altering a passage by J.R.R. Tolkien. One fear to rule them all, one fear to find them, he wrote. One fear to bring them all and in the black box bind them. There are two important concepts to take away from this paper. The first, scientists are huge dorks. Second, one of the biggest causes of fear and anxiety is uncertainty. Our brains, little monkey prediction engines, hate it. They behave strangely around it, like math when it nears infinity. And if you imagine an infinity of uncertainty, you couldn't get much closer than 2020, a pandemic, a racial reckoning, a failure of institutions, storms and fires no one could predict. America is clearly becoming a more frightened nation, says L. Edward Day, Ph.D., a researcher at Chapman University, which does an annual fear survey. Only one fear in 2015 tops 10 scared more than 50% of the population. Now all 10 are higher than 50%. Intolerance of uncertainty is one of the three major risk factors that can lead to problems with anxiety and depression. The other two are fear of feeling fearful and social isolation. All three are up from normal levels. Since early in the pandemic, a lab has been working on new ways to help people handle these unprecedented times. In intervention, a group session and an app that helps people myth bust their maladaptive thoughts, then encourages them to do behavioral experiments such as leaving home without double checking that the front door is locked. And by the time they get home, they've proven to themselves that they can handle the uncertainty, and most likely their home is fine. The takeaway is the thing you were afraid of happening isn't probably going to happen. and a lot of times, if it does, it's not that bad. The fear is usually a miscalculation. Our cautious brains believing it better to see a monster than what's actually there, a boundless statistical gray area. Why do we even feel fear? Because people who didn't would get Darwined out of existence pretty quickly. But that's the problem with trying to beat fear, especially in a time in which some of our worst imaginings have manifested themselves in objective, observable reality. Every so often, our stupid brains are right. The key is to manage fear in a way that helps you live your most productive life. Usually, fear is seen as a negative emotion, but it's also the engine of a range of recreational activities and really at the source of meaningful, pleasurable experiences for a lot of people. If you're looking to harness your fear for the power of good, I'm going to give you a few tips and stories from writers over the next few readings. The first one is defang your fear memories. The new science of fear extinction could kill off many phobias. People with phobia have an emotional memory that involves an association between whatever scares them, say for it's spiders, and a dreaded outcome, being attacked by those spiders. Dutch researchers recently proved that you can override these fears by exposing a person to the source of the phobia, a tarantula in the study, and administering a beta blocker. What's happening? Explains Margita Koros, a psychologist at Kent Clinics, which offers the treatment, is that when an arachnophobe is exposed to a spider in a certain way, it reacts a fear memory. After exposure, the arachnophobe receives a single dose of propranolol, a widely used beta blocker. The beta blocker disrupts the way the memory is stored, eliminating the fear. Carosi says the approach is 80 to 90% successful in one session for fears to which the patient can be exposed, such as spiders and dogs, mice, needles, and confined spaces. The treatment is not available in the U.S. yet, where the conventional approach is exposure therapy. Basically, the therapist creates a fear hierarchy for the patient, starting with the least threatening exposure for dogs, a stuffed toy, and working their way up to a real dog. The study looks at ways to make this kind of fear extinction psychopathy more effective by combining it with a drug called nabilene, a synthetic form of a chemical that enhances memory formation. According to Dr. Kaiser, people with fear, such as flying or PTSD or obsessive compulsive disorder, may have problems with fear extinction learning. Early research shows this approach can boost that form of learning and help alleviate those fears. Overcome the fear of re-injury. There's a huge wave that we can crush, and we are going to get over it. Here's a surf rider's experience. Most people standing astride a toe-in surf paddle at the apex of a 75-foot wave in Portugal would have exactly one thought: I am going to die. Brazilian big wave surfer Maya Gabriela understands this in her bones, literally in her right fibula, which snapped as the force of a squirrely 8-ish-foot wave yanked her off her board and her foot straps in 2013. A colleague on a jet ski dragged her to the beach where she was given CPR and rushed to a hospital. 7 years later, she has gone to successfully ride on more of these sea monsters, including the biggest ridden by a man or woman in 2020, a 73.5-foot behemoth wave. You think Gabriela is immune to fear? No. She says, I'm scared, and every time the season starts, it's really hard for me to accept that I want to ride big waves again. After her wipeout, Gabriela focused on her physical recovery. She ignored any mental repercussions from the accident, and because she wasn't in shape to surf big waves, never had to confront her insecurities about being able to handle them. When I reached peak performance, which was 4 years later, that's when I had a big mental breakdown. I was hospitalized and I couldn't get out of it. When Gabriella came back to the sport, decisions about which waves to take and what lines to ride were heavier. She takes anxiety medications to control her panic. She learned to trust her training and believe in herself. When attempting to come back from an injury, the most important skill is to focus on the moment, the task at hand. Many athletes recite mantras or adapt self-talk statements during high-pressure moments. In the NFL, players will say things like, "Playmaker all day, your time, see the ball." Gabriella often chants as she's being towed by a jet ski to the wave, and she leaves herself an out. The purest, most dizzying moment of terror always hits at the very top of a wave when she angles her board down that sheer face and chooses it. "If I want to pull out, I pull out," she says, and over until the moment her tow and partner powers the jet ski to a safety over the back of the wave and she lets go of the rope. How about cope with the fear a loved one will get sick? Learning about statistics has helped me understand the pandemic data better. While sobering, it helps me process my fear of my parents getting sick. I'm talking to them more, and their stories of enduring hardships give me wisdom. How to crush financial fear. When you struggle financially, words can often ring hollow. I know this because so many times I ignored the advice of others when I had difficulty paying the rent, my loans, my credit card bills, and in my darkest moments, struggled to find food to eat. It's hard to see the bright side when times are so dire. It's difficult to see the promise of tomorrow when the day-to-day weighs so heavily on you. And no, good advice is not the same as money in one's hand. Still, I beg, don't be like me. Don't allow fear to swallow you whole. My pride and stubbornness and depression, magnified by money woes, all contributed to the cloudiness in my head in the past. I try not to live with regret. I admit that ignoring previous well wishes, words of encouragement, and advice were expensive mistakes. All that stubbornness did make me more depressed. I couldn't stop being scared, and I couldn't quit feeling like I'd failed as a man. 2020 only magnified the gross inequity that had long existed for so long for so many of us. Societal ills are not the fault of the individual impacted by them. Unfortunately, I don't have the funds or silver spoons to share with millions. What I can offer, however, are words that are not cash, but I assure you they aren't cheap. Forgive yourself for conditions not of your making. As far as your money woes go, if you can't pay all your bills, paying the ones that you can. If you have to move back home or crash with someone as you try to get on your feet, don't consider it humiliation. Be grateful that you have somewhere to lay your head. If you have to let go of certain dreams, or at the very least put them on the back burner in order to do something that helps you simply survive, don't view that as a failure. Life is so much harder for some of us than it should be, but life cannot be won in fear. If there's anything that I have learned from moving home twice, crashing on someone's sofa for longer than I would have preferred, or numerous hits to my credit score when the bills came too much to bear, it's that I wish I had let it sink into my soul as deeply as it did. It only delayed the focus I needed to figure out a way to forge ahead. You can overcome, but only after faith trounces your fear. How about ponder your mortality? In Bhutan, people think of the Buddhist concept of metta-pa, or impermanence, every day. The Lama Dhammo Gayi Shin explained it to me that nothing lasts and therefore nothing can be held on to. All things change. All things die. The Lama told me to think of Mita Kapa 3 times a day in the morning, afternoon, and evening. Pondering Mita Kapa can be terrifying at first, but it adds clarity and urgency to every moment. There's no procrastinating or saying, I'll do X when Y happens. The practice has helped me reprioritize my life and made me calmer and more grateful and happy. Deal with the fear of sucking as a dad. Stephen Rinalea, 46, has been charged by a grizzly bear has been stung by a bullet ant and stomped by a moose, but what hurt him the most was the size of a sesame seed tick. Over 4 decades, Rianella has developed a practice with the outdoors, a skill set to avoid and cope with dangers in all sizes. The tick gave him Lyme disease. It's all about knowledge, preparation, and being aware of your surroundings, he says. What's scary for him is the stampede of anxiety that comes with trying to be a great dad to 3 kids, 10, 8, and 5. Those fears are not fun to anticipate, deeply perplexing and hard to train for. The greatest fear is that your kids turn out to be not as good, and you know that you are the primary driver in that outcome. To avoid that, he shares his passion for the wild through family adventures that nurture a respect for nature. I think a lot about the values of self-sufficiency and adaptability. And spending time outdoors teaches that, whether it's learning to pack a bag, catching your own lunch, or tweaking a plan if a storm blows in. Outsmart a fear of needles. Ever since I had botched a blood draw while delirious with malaria as a kid, I fainted when getting injections. Yup, embarrassing. Recently, a doctor told me to tense and relax the muscles in alternating limbs, not the biceps area, and breathe deeply through my nose. It stabilizes your blood pressure, and I haven't fainted ever since. Scare yourself stronger. Watching horror movies has surprisingly psychological benefits, according to new research. In the lead up to Halloween 2020, while most of us were trying to figure out how to trick or treat from 6 feet away, University of Chicago researcher Coltrane Shriver, PhD candidate, was an interactive haunted house in Denmark. He was in an interactive haunted house in Denmark, studying people in masks, choosing whether to deliver a rival of leaked contaminants to the rebels or the government. Scrivener's studies morbid curiosity, a personality trait that involves turning toward images of death, illnesses, and violence rather than what would make psychological sense, running away. At the beginning of the pandemic, Shriver noticed that many people were doing exactly that. This pandemic movie, Contagion, had shot from 270 to number 2 on the list of the most watched Warner Brothers films. He distributed online surveys to figure out why and found that the scary movie watchers were faring better during quarantine than the non-scary movie watchers. Morbid curiosity as a trait seemed to make people more resilient to psychological distress. Shriver's latest preliminary research suggests that people who have experienced trauma are more likely to engage in morbid curiosity, perhaps using it as a way to process negative thoughts or to feel prepared for other bad things that may happen. Just anecdotally, if you look on Reddit or online horror forums to talk to horror fans, a lot of them will say they use horror to cope with traumas in their life or cope with anxiety or depression. You can try this. The next time you're feeling bad, put on a scary movie. It may help even out a depressed mood or focus your anxiety on an external source rather than the problems you're ruminating about. Identify your hidden fears. Some fears are so ingrained that you may not realize they're impacting your behavior. Correcting that requires societal and personal change. Philip Entebogoff, PhD, co-founder for the Center for Policing Equity at Yale University, surveyed more than 700 police officers in 2018 to better understand how bias impacts public safety. One finding seemed ironic. Police who were afraid of being seen as racist were more likely to resort to coercive tactics when dealing with community members. This, Goff explains, is a stereotype threat, a concern with being evaluated in terms of a negative stereotype about one's group. It often leads to underperformance, and while not tied to fear, may be exacerbated by it. When we're in a fear state, we're also often in a scarcity mindset, he says. You start hoarding resources like information. Stereotypes are shortcuts that help us make better sense of the world. Those shortcuts backfire for a number of reasons, but often when we perceive other stereotyping us. In the instance of those police surveyed, they resorted to coercion when their sense of legal authority failed, says Goff, in the end affirming the stereotype they tried not to avoid. The effect has serious implications. In the U.S., black men are 2.5 times as likely as white men to be killed by police. Overcoming bias is a complex personal and societal problem. Diversity in the workplace is one promising way to change stereotypes. You can take a digital impact assessment quiz at Project Implicit. There are tests that examine you for your bias related to weight, gender, age, and disability, and race. Another tactic is to remind yourself to evaluate people based on their personal characteristics rather than those affiliated with a group. Still, Goff argues, systematic change is necessary, and buzzy and anti-racism training isn't enough. There's the translation of anti-racism as if it's a self-help concept, he says. But if we reduce resisting racism to just a thing that makes you a better person, we missed the whole point. Banish your fear of failure. Escape a negative feedback loop with these tips. Identify the specific fear. Anxiety is often vague. What if I fail, or what if something bad happens? Narrowing down the fears makes them more specific and manageable. Try mental contrasting. When visualizing a plan to overcome failure, don't just imagine success. Visualize the grind as well. This prepares you better and anticipates roadblocks. Answer what ifs. When you start answering the worst case scenario questions, you start to explain how you would cope, de-weaponize anxiety, and reduce stress. And failure is not forever. Failure is an event, not an identity. Remember that failure is a temporary experience, not a destination. It doesn't feel good, but learn something and move on. Rewire your fight or flight circuitry. Overcome any fear using this simple strategy by Wim Hof. After Wim Hof's wife committed suicide in 1995, the father of four was paralyzed with fear. And to gain control, he experimented by seeing how much exposure to freezing cold he could endure. By breathing deeply and focusing his mind, he was able to warm his core and skin and temperature. He effectively trained his mind not to freak out when his body was sensing fear signals. 2-minute wonder. You can do the same by taking a daily cold under 60 degrees shower for 2 minutes. You can start with a warm shower and then spray only your feet and legs, and then gradually go to full immersion for as long as you can handle, say 30 seconds. After doing this 5 days a week for 4 weeks, your mind will start to override the fight or flight response, and you will feel empowered in other situations when facing fear. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Tony Ray with Healthy Life. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Clinics offer coronavirus tests. Midland Memorial Hospital, 68 nurse. MidlandHealth.org, mobile testing center at West Campus for COVID-19 nasal swab PCR. Must call for appointment. Antibody testing at West Campus or Main Campus Direct Access, 68 nurse or 221-1111. Cash prize for antibody testing, $50.
This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday Night Movie, we begin a series of Oscar-winning films. This year, the Academy Awards ceremony is Sunday, April 25th. Each Saturday through April 24th, we'll pick an audio-described movie from each decade that won the Academy Award for Best Picture. This week, we begin in the 1930s with Mutiny on the Bounty, starring Charles Laughton and Clark Gable, and directed by Frank Lloyd. This film was a huge box office success, becoming the highest-grossing film of 1935 and one of MGM's biggest hits of the 1930s.
Murdering butcher. I've had enough of this bloodship. He's not master of life and death on a quarter deck above the angels. McCoy! Quill! I'm sick of blood. Bloody backs, bloody faces. Why are you doing your last command on this ship? We'll be men again if we hang for it.
Casting me adrift, 3,500 miles from a port of coal, you're sending me to my doom, eh? Well, you're wrong, Christian. I'll take this boat as she floats to England if I must. I'll live to see you, all of you, hanging from the highest yardarm in the British fleet.
The Voyage of the Bounty.
Described winner for Best Picture, 1935's Mutiny on the Bounty, Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. And next week, listen for our selection for Best Picture from the 1940s.